Welcome to All Sides with Anna Staver. What makes another human being fascinating? Is it their intelligence, their drive, their passion for a cause, a business, a career? Is it something quirkier, something artistic, enigmatic? We here at All Sides wanted to find out. So we've set out on a mission to find fascinating Ohioans and bring their stories to you. We begin with a couple who have turned their Lancaster neighborhood into a living advent calendar. Joseph Taylor and his husband Enrique Jimenez are co-chairs of the Holiday Advent Window Walk. Welcome to All Sides, Joseph.
Good morning. How are you?
And thank you for having us, Anna.
Welcome, Enrique. That way we know who is who when they're talking. Joseph, this started out as your idea. What inspired it?
Okay, so we were on vacation a few years ago, and one of the stops we made was in Salzburg, and we took the Sound of Music tour, and one of the stops led us to see the gazebo from 16 going on 17.
Yes.
And there was a giant building that had turned its facade into an advent calendar. So like every day of December, they were opening up shutters and there was a different number. It was so cool to see on a big scale. And then around that time, we also saw Rick Steves' Europe Christmas special. Mm-hmm. And he highlighted the advent window tradition that's popular around Germanic Europe and specifically in Switzerland. And this tiny snow-capped, like picture-perfect Christmas village was doing advent windows. So I thought that it was a perfect fit to do in our neighborhood because we have so many beautiful homes, and
we live in a historic district of Lancaster. So all the homes are 200 years plus. So, well, not 200 years plus, 100 years plus. And we thought this would be a great way to tie in the holiday season with the history behind our town.
Yeah. Folks listening on the radio won't be able to see you guys, but there is some incredible wood paneling behind them. So
yeah, our house was built in 1830. And so we decided to reach out to our neighbors and see if anybody had interest in this idea. You know, we thought it was a great idea, but we thought if we don't do it, who's going to do it? So Joseph took the initiative and knocked on everybody's door.
I was going to say, did you literally go door to door being like, hi, I'm your neighbor. How would you feel about an advent calendar?
That is exactly how it went down. There was actually one neighbor who was sitting out on her porch. And as I went up to ask her if she wanted to join, she almost looked kind of scared. Because like nowadays, it's not like common for people to just come knocking.
Yeah.
But luckily, everyone was really supportive.
Yeah, and this really allowed for us to get to know the neighborhood. We didn't really know too many of our neighbors. And this really has, every time that somebody joins the project, this is our third year, we get to meet new neighbors and form friendships and connections that we didn't have before this project.
Do you have more than 25 people who want to do it now? Is there an application process to get in?
There's a boundary to the historic neighborhood, and the people participating would like to keep it sort of small.
Yeah.
Just so you can walk it at night.
Yeah, absolutely.
In a short amount of time. But we do have some people signed up already for next year, which is great because that way you can take a year off because it's kind of like an undertaking to participate.
Yeah. You know, you shared some photos of past years and you've had shepherds, colorful rendering of birds, bells, Santa, the Grinch, kind of runs the gamut of what people do. But I understand you're starting to put together themes for years.
Yeah. So last year, one of our neighbors who's helping us organize is Jill Neuheiser. And she came up with this great idea to have windows inspired by Christmas carols.
Mm.
So every window last year had a corresponding Christmas carol, and like there was a QR code on yard signs in front of each home so you could scan it, listen to the music, and admire the window.
Oh, I love that.
Yeah, it was really fun. And so we are doing like 1 year on, 1 year off with themes, which means this year there is no theme.
What is next year's theme, or you don't know yet?
We don't know yet, yeah. But like people are anxious or like excited to do like a more pop culture type theme. So
oh,
I
that
think
might
we'll
be fun.
Something, yeah, something fun next year.
So how much creative freedom do folks get? Do you guys coordinate to make sure you didn't all pick the same Christmas carol?
We did. We have a system of Google Sheets. So like we share our themes one or our window concepts once we come up with them, just to avoid redundancy. And then every year we've learned like different best practices that we share with each other. We have a kickoff workshop every year, and we go back over different methods and like
Different mediums,
different
material.
mediums, materials, just because it is pretty challenging to like come up with a 2D window artwork concept that can be backlit.
That's
So
a
it's
good point.
definitely
You
like,
gotta light it.
yeah,
Yeah.
and some of these big windows are really big because these are old homes, so
Yeah.
it's work.
But like with the help of Jill Nyheiser and Regina Shaw, another one of our neighbors,
They're part of our committee.
we are we organize everything, and it's mostly done virtually.
Yeah.
So what doesn't work? Like, can you use paint?
Paint is actually one of the more popular mediums.
There's actually a kind of paint that you can put on the window where you can not, you know, damage the window
Yeah, I would
afterwards.
think. Like
I
window
think it's called a
displays that you see
class.
at stores.
Yeah,
Yeah,
exactly. It's
yeah.
just like that. Like, and we buy it in pen form. It's like glass pen.
But some people use cellophane, some people use, you
Tissue
know,
paper.
tissue paper. It's anything that is translucent enough that light will go through it so that it, you know, it shines bright when they are
Yeah.
opened up at night.
And you have to think about how the different colors, if you're going to layer, say, like tissue paper, how it's going to create a slightly different color depending on the layers that you build up.
Right.
Yeah, and so we encourage people to experiment because of that exact kind of thing.
That's going to
And I
be
think
so fun. Like, how long does it take to put your window up?
so last year, I think I worked on our window for about 2 weeks.
Oh, my
Right.
goodness.
But like the people in our neighborhood, like we all live in old homes and we are all taking care of them. And it requires a lot of creative problem solving to take care of a historic home. So we believe that the people in our neighborhood are uniquely suited to this exact kind of challenge. Yeah, they're used to having these kind of challenges.
I bet. So, what was your window last year?
So last year, our window was inspired by the Christmas carol, See Amid the Winter Snow. And at that time, I was reading the biography of Beatrix Potter. And I really loved her story of living and being inspired by nature. So our window had a bunch of different woodland critters that you might see amid the winter snow because they don't hibernate. So we had like a
Aw.
silhouette of Peter Rabbit, a silhouette of a possum, a deer, different birds, a raccoon. It was
Yeah.
really fun.
And you painted all of that on the window?
Well, I did like alcohol ink to give a sort of icy splatter effect behind each animal silhouette. And then each animal had like a black silhouette with
Glitter.
glitter on it. So it had,
It sparkled.
yeah, it had a nice sparkly effect.
Oh my gosh. Like, y'all really go all out. I love it.
It's really fun. It's like, it's nice just because like putting up Christmas decorations are fun every year. And this adds something new and unique.
Well, and also, since there's one every night, most of us neighbors go to each other's homes to see the big reveal at 6 p.m. every night in December. So it gives us something to do that's fun in this like bleak, dark time in Christmas. So it really is a fun activity to do.
It sounds like it really builds community. I feel like you probably have made friends with your neighbors, which is something we don't do that much anymore.
Right.
Yeah, totally. Like one of the things that we borrowed from that Rick Steves episode is that like the residents of that little village would get together every night and have a sort of party when it was their night for their window to be revealed. And because it's so cold outside, actually our first year we didn't have this. And so we would show up for the window reveals and then we would all just be standing outside in the cold. And then it's like, okay, well, bye. Like so the next year we borrowed the concept from that Swiss village to have open houses. And so like I think maybe like a third of the homes had an open house on their night, and it was really fun. Like we got to socialize and warm up inside, have some hot chocolate.
And eat a lot of cookies.
Oh
Oh
my
my
goodness, you
God.
have like a Christmas party every night.
Right.
Yeah,
Essentially.
we see a lot of our neighbors. So like this year we have 9 open houses scheduled, and they're all spaced out and mostly on the weekends, but It was a big success last year, and it's nice.
And we want to welcome and encourage people to come from out of town. You know, it's something that you can do walking. It's something you could do driving. It's best appreciated on a walk because they're all the houses are close together. So it's like a 30-minute walk total to see all 25. But you know, it's something that we want to encourage people to see.
Yeah, and it is at adventwindowwalk.com. That's where you can find all the information about. They've got a map of where all the houses are, the order they're going to go in, and they will continue past Christmas Day, correct? So you could go see all 25 lit up after.
That's right. Yeah, we are running all the way through January 1st. So that includes the night of January 1st. And we have a few bonus windows this year. We've got one for Christmas Day at the Decorative Arts Center of Ohio. And on the 26th, that is actually the first night of Kwanzaa and Hanukkah. And we have a Kwanzaa window at our local Fairfield County District Library. And then our Hanukkah window is at the Fairfield County Foundation.
Right. And if you didn't get a pen and didn't write that down, again, you can find it all at adventwindowwalk.com. Do you guys have like a Facebook group or just the website?
Yeah, actually, we've got some really fun content on our Instagram and Facebook. Those are both at Advent Window Walk. Please follow along the countdown. We're going to have some fun behind the scenes reels for each window this year.
Oh, that sounds like I am so curious about how they get actually like put together. I'm a crafty person by nature, so this is totally up my alley.
Oh, totally. This is like a crafting dream.
Yes, it is.
It's something that I think you would really enjoy doing yourself if you like crafting.
I think so. And I just love the sense of community that you've done this and it's like all of your neighbors and then you hang out and have hot chocolate and look at them. It feels very on brand for the season.
For sure.
Yeah, it is. And I love that it's snowing outside today. It feels like very Christmassy.
Yeah.
I know. We didn't get a lot of snow last year, actually. So I don't know if this portends more. This is hard to ask, but have you had a favorite window over the years?
Okay, well, this is kind of a shameless plug, but I'm going to make my mom very happy by saying that her window last year was spectacular.
Oh, so she lives nearby.
She is three blocks down, and she is the first window this year. We're going to have like a live stream ribbon cutting on Facebook Live. But last year, her window was inspired by the Christmas carol, I Saw Three Ships. Mm. And she found a way to make a custom, like, motor system to make ships look like they're bobbing up and down
on an
ocean on her window.
And she also had like a sun effect, and then she had the sun glistening on the water.
Yes.
Like it was kind of insane, but like in the best way.
Oh my gosh, I guess I know where you get it from.
Well, I'm not at her level. I can't make things like, I don't want to incorporate motors into our window personally, but it's so great to see her talent and the talent of all of our neighbors, really.
Yes.
That feels like it rivals like the Macy's Christmas window displays.
Oh, for sure.
Hers does.
Hers does, for sure.
I love that. I think that's like, can you give us any sneak peeks about what we might see this year?
Okay, so I hope that my mom will forgive me, but her window is going to be
the first one, and it's going to have parts to it, right?
Yeah, it's going to have a lot of moving parts. let's see, what else is there? I think mine might incorporate, like, it's going to look like a Christmas quilt.
Mm-hmm. Mm.
And then another window is going to be different tartans, like different clan tartans from Scotland.
Oh.
Festive. But I don't know.
Like, there'll be a lot to see.
Yeah. We like to not have too much knowledge. Usually when they put in their description, it's really bare bones so that you're still surprised when you see it, you know? So you have an idea of like what not to do because they're doing it, but you also want to be surprised and have fun.
If people are curious, they can follow along on our socials for at Advent Window Walk, because we will update them daily with the window reveals.
Do you guys get a lot of visitors? Like, has word started to really get out about it?
Last year, yes. And we even have followers in like Europe on Instagram.
We have like the similar projects from two different Swiss villages following us, which
is
really—
Oh my goodness.
Yeah, it's super cool.
That was Joseph Taylor and his husband, Enrique Jimenez, the co-founders of the Holiday Advent Window Walk. You can find more information about it at Facebook Instagram, or online at windowwalk.com. Thank you so much, guys. I really appreciate it.
Thank you, Anna.
Coming up, we're talking Disney and what it takes to be a costume artist. That's when All Sides continues on 89.7 NPR News.
No matter what happens in Washington, the NPR Politics Podcast is here for you. For the latest news, insights, and analysis from the election and beyond, listen to the NPR Politics Podcast.
You're listening to All Sides. I'm your host, Anna Staver. If you've been to a football game at the Shoe, you've seen the ushers who help things go smoothly in the stands. It is no easy task corralling more than 100,000 fans each game day, and they get there sometimes before dawn to get ready. We're talking this next with Dan Pullen, who's been doing the job of an OSU usher for 50 years. He started back in 1975. Welcome to All Sides, Dan.
Very nice to be here.
50 years. That's quite an achievement. Congratulations.
Well, it's been a wonderful ride, and I've really enjoyed it.
What made you decide to be an usher all those years ago?
Being in the Shoe, watching the band, watching the team, and people. I really enjoy dealing with people, and there's a whole gamut of different types of people, and I really enjoy how we see.
Yeah. So you are one of four ushers that have served this long. The others are Lynn Jacquez, Robert Kleinlin, and Judy Manley. So there's a group of you, a small group of you, that are in this 50-year mark.
That's just this year.
Yeah.
Every year we celebrate ushers that have this amount of time involved.
It's so incredible to me to think that you have been doing this, well, longer than I've been alive. Were you a Buckeye fan first?
Yes, I would say so.
Have you become a bigger Buckeye fan?
I still enjoy working with people.
Yeah.
Buckeye fan, yes. I really, really enjoy it.
Yeah. One of the things I recently learned is that ushers are different from the redcoats we see at the stadium. Can you explain the difference for folks?
Redcoats normally are on the outside of the concourse collecting tickets. Redcoats work a lot of other sporting events, tennis, swimming, baseball. Ushers, on the other hand, are on the inside of the bowl, helping guests get to their seats and dealing with problems that they might have inside the stadium. The advantage of an usher over a redcoat is we're in the middle of the football game. We get to watch the band, and we're more involved in the overall group of people that are there.
Yeah, the band is pretty incredible to watch.
It is.
I sometimes, like, the routines they come up with, the moves, like, I just have no idea how they do that with hundreds of people on the field.
Well, it started out, I'm going to say this, I'm pretty close on what I'm going to say here. They used to do it on paper. And then a few years ago, they decided to go to an iPad. And all of their moves, all of their music is now recorded on an iPad. And that's how they can get into all these complicated moves.
A few years ago, you were given the title of Administrative Supervisor of the Ushers, which puts you above about 500 people who work on game day?
Yes, that's true.
Atla. There are 109 portal chiefs, 24 deck supervisors. So, I mean, it is not a simple procedure to get 100,000 people to their seats.
It isn't. And it starts early in the morning. We're responsible for taking attendance on everyone, not only the ushers, but we also take attendance for the redcoats. We also pass out close to 200 radios. And at the end of the game, then we collect all those radios and collect all their timesheets. And then I spend a good portion of Sunday doing payroll.
What time do you get there on game day? How many hours ahead of kickoff?
Usually about 6 hours before.
So for a noon kickoff, you're there at 6 a.m.?
Between 5:30 and 6, yes.
Oh, my goodness. What takes 6 hours to get ready?
We set up all the tables, all the radios. We pass out all the attendance sheets, move people that need to be moved, look at people that have called off and tried to fill those spots. It's pretty crazy in the morning.
One of the crazy things that I heard is that there are ushers who don't live in Ohio anymore who fly in for these games.
Well, I put that information down here.
Yeah.
And we've got ushers from Arizona, Florida, Illinois, Indiana, Michigan, Ohio, of course, and West Virginia.
That, oh my goodness. What keeps them flying in to do these games year after
year?
They
love it. They love it. And they normally don't miss a game.
Oh my goodness. You know, what the other thing that I found really interesting was that at the beginning, Boy Scouts were the first to volunteer as ushers. Mm-hmm. I didn't realize that the Boy Scouts of America would come and help people get to their seats. And although they've replaced it with professional ushers, it is a partnership that still continues to this day, right? You may still see Boy Scouts ushering.
Usually I end up placing 20 to 30 Boy Scouts every game. That help our ushers.
That has to, I think that's such a cool tradition to keep at least as part of what you guys do.
Oh, it is, by all means. It's so nice to see these young scouts come in and help out, and a lot of them are there game after game, and they enjoy it also.
Yeah. And ushers used to be unpaid volunteers, but a few years back it became a paid position, and there's also benefits like parking, discounts on food, on merchandise. It seems that, it sounds like they've made it more than just like you volunteer and you show up.
That's true.
Although that means you got to do payroll.
It's not bad.
No.
You'll find I complain a lot, but I really don't mean it.
Do you ever interact with the players, the coaches?
No. No.
You're just up in the stands. I have to imagine that you've seen a lot of things in 50 years of ushering football games.
That I have. And some are interesting. Some can be repeated, and other ones can't.
That's fair. What can you repeat on the radio? What you can tell me after is probably a totally different thing.
I think we'll go with that.
What's it like working with Ohio State fans, though? Because, I mean, people are passionate. Like, I mean, it is not an NFL team, but people love it like it is.
99% of the fans that we help are very, very interested in the football game. And they're good-spirited, wonderful people. And, yeah.
Are the Michigan home games, is there any different preparation for those big rivalry games?
It started, prepping for Michigan started a few games ago.
Really? That far in advance?
Yeah. And we've got a big one coming up this Saturday with Indiana. And
yeah, that's going to be a really big one.
It'll be an interesting game this weekend.
Oh, for sure. The Shoe is also home to music concerts that ushers sometimes work, right?
I'm sorry, please.
Oh, music concerts sometimes. You guys work when they're at the shoe.
We work the Buckeye Superfest. We work the spring commencement, spring game.
Oh, wow.
We're active with just about everything going on inside the stadium.
Are you guys going to be ushering at the NFL game that's going to be played? I mean, sorry, hockey, NHL game that's going to be played?
As far as I know, yes.
Oh, that'll be exciting. I don't think there's ever been a hockey game in the shoe before.
No, it's going to be interesting to see how they get the ice down.
I have so many questions about that. I have no idea how they're going to do, but I'm sure there are people smarter than me working on how to put ice down.
I agree.
Especially because it could be 20 degrees or it could be 60. You don't really know with that time of year.
That's true.
The spring games are a highlight for you, or at least that's what I understand. Can you share why the spring game is special?
I think they're important to the fans because rarely do a lot of people get a chance to come inside the shoe. Mm. And they bring families in, young fans that normally don't get a chance.
We took our girls to a spring game. Yeah.
Yeah. It's a different atmosphere, but it's so nice that we were able to bring in young fans that can see inside the shoe.
You know, in the 50 years that you've been an usher, the stadium has undergone some pretty significant renovations.
Yes.
Particularly around 2000. What's it been like to watch the stadium evolve like that?
I remember when they still had bleachers down on the track.
Oh, when they had a track?
When they had a track. And over the years, they've changed that. They actually have I explain it as an upside-down bathtub underneath the field because the field is actually lower than the river.
Yeah.
So they've got this dome underneath the field that pulls all that water out of there, which is kind of neat.
It is. It's a feat of engineering for sure.
And they've changed the entrance to the portals. They used to it's been a big renovation.
Yeah, they added those stained glass windows. They did a lot to they moved where the band practices and gets ready. They've done a lot of shifting in the stadium.
That's true. And there's more coming.
Yeah, yeah. It is ever-changing. You know, I wonder, do you remember the very first time you ushered? Do you remember who Ohio State was playing?
No.
It's been a minute for sure.
No, I don't.
Yeah. So how does one become an usher? If someone was like, oh, gosh, I'd love to go watch the games and help people get to their seats.
It used to be a 2 or 3 year wait.
Oh, wow.
Now Event Management and Evendure, they've put together an application online, and you can go out online and fill out an application. And if you fill out an application, 9 chances out of 10, if you meet all the criteria, we'll bring you on. You go through an interview process, a background check, we'll bring you on.
Yeah. One of the criteria I understand, though, is you have to be able to stand on your feet for hours at a time.
That's true.
And that makes sense, given the nature of the job.
We don't want our ushers sitting. Part of their job is standing and paying attention to our guests and treating our guests with that somebody is paying attention, not watching the game.
Yeah.
So we do require our ushers to stand. That doesn't mean that we don't allow them to take a break.
Yeah.
And if they need a break, they run it past their supervisor and they can go sit down for a little bit. Usually it's about a half hour.
Yeah. Do you have a favorite memory in all these years that you've been ushering?
Oh, a lot of them. But here's one that I when I was coming up through the ranks, my boss at the time put me in charge of the camera down on the home side of the field that runs up and down on the cart.
Yeah.
And running interference for that. And that I did that for about 8 years. But the best part about it was, do you remember Survivor?
Yes.
Rupert? You remember
the
Rupert?
The very first season?
One of the first
ones.
Yeah,
I think so. I stopped watching after the first couple seasons.
Rupert was a cart driver.
Really?
And I got to know him quite well. And
yeah, that was wild.
That was a good time.
Yeah, because you guys would hang out probably while he's driving and doing his job, mm-hmm. and you're doing yours. That's crazy. So you've been all around the stadium. For somebody who likes the Buckeyes, what's the best seat in the house?
The best seat?
Yeah.
Oh, I got to be careful here because D deck's a pretty good deck.
Mm-hmm.
But again, it depends on if you want to sit with the students or if you want to sit under the weather.
Yeah.
To watch the football game.
Some of those upper decks, when it's hot and when it's cold, that's
rough.
They're rough. Yeah.
That's rough.
But I think it depends on what you're looking for in terms of
true
where's going to be the best spot. Although if you're the opposing team coming in, it's whatever section they've designated for you. You probably just want to be with the small contingent of your own team.
That's very true.
It is always interesting to me. You will see people travel for it. Like I've gone to home games and you'll see surprisingly decent contingent. Even a couple years ago, I went to the Oregon home game. Mm-hmm. There was a surprising number of Duck fans who showed up.
Oh, yeah. Ohio State's got a big following as far as fans. And it's nice to see that group show at visiting campuses.
Yeah. So how much longer do you think you'll be an usher? Are we going to be counting you back for your 75 years of ushering?
Well, I told my boss this, as long as my health stays good and you don't fire me, I'll stick around. So right now I have no intentions of leaving.
So, yeah, we may see you when you hit 60 years or 70.
I brought in a couple people to help, because mm-hmm. I did see that this is more than one person can do. And I brought in two folks that are really, really special. And I'll be glad to share with them the responsibilities when the time comes.
Is there a record for longest serving usher?
There is. I don't know what it is.
It's more than 50. We know that.
Yes, very much so.
Oh, my goodness. That was Ohio State usher Dan Pullen, now celebrating 50 years, guiding fans to and from their seats at the Shoe. Thank you so much for your time this morning.
You're quite welcome. Enjoyed it.
Yeah, and thank you so much for helping folks to their seats. I'll look for you the next time I'm at a game.
Please do.
Coming up, what it takes to be a costume designer for Disney. That's when All Sides continues on 89.7 NPR News.
No matter what happens in Washington, the NPR Politics Podcast is here for you. For the latest news, insights, and analysis from the election and beyond, listen to the NPR Politics Podcast.
America healthy again.
Make America healthy again.
Make America healthy again.
President-elect Donald Trump wants Robert F. Kennedy Jr. to lead the Department of Health and Human Services. What impact could Kennedy's mix of pro-healthy food, anti-childhood vaccination worldview have on one of the nation's largest federal departments? That's on the next On Point. Later today at noon on 89.7 NPR News.
The U.S. Farm Bill covers everything from forest health to food banks. We're talking about it tomorrow on All Sides from 10 to noon on 89.7 NPR News.
Twice a month, over at lunch, black and white residents gather on Alabama's Gulf Coast to try to get past their differences.
If we can do it here in Mobile, in a city that has the scars we do, that the last lynching happened here, the last slave ship landed here, I think there's power in that.
I'm Juana Summers. We visit the Unify Project on All Things Considered from NPR News.
This afternoon at 4 on 89.7 NPR News.
Support for WOSU comes from thousands of listeners and from Wolf's Ridge Brewing, a family-owned Columbus craft brewery and restaurant, introducing rentable greenhouses on the patio of their Clintonville location, Understory. Learn more at understorycbus.com.
You're listening to All Sides. I'm your host, Anna Staver. Our final fascinating Ohioan has a passion for costume design. She's helped create the Disney magic at the Walt Disney World and has brought that magic here to Ohio State University as a costume studio manager. Lauren Coco Mayer, welcome to All Sides.
Well, thank you. I'm so glad to be here.
Yeah. So you've worked in costume design and curation throughout your career. I have to wonder, were you that kid that was always dressing up?
Oh, yeah. My mom was constantly wondering what happened to my shoes. Where is my hairpiece? And me and my brother would be putting on shows with our parents' costumes. Yes, their regular day wear.
Oh, my gosh. I love it. Did you ever get into sewing or crafting your own as you got older or no?
No, I kind of fell into it in theater. I wanted to be a singer, actor, dancer. And then they tell you, what else can you do? And I said, well, I like costumes. I can sew. And there's the story. And from junior year at Wright State University, I was all of a sudden Coco the costumer.
Oh, that's got good alliteration.
Yeah. Yes. Thank you. I think I'll keep it.
So you decide to do that, and you end up at Walt Disney World for 18 years.
Me and the mouse. It was, I was working at the Goodman Theater as the shop assistant shop manager in the costume shop. Next thing I know, I get a phone call. Hi, we need someone to fix some Prince Charming and, you know, attendance costumes. I said, oh, we can help you with that. I said, when do you need them? Tomorrow noon. Okay. But you know what? I made it happen. And they said, you rock. You need to work for Disney World. It took a couple of years, but I got in, and the rest is mouse history.
Oh, yeah. I have so many questions about this because the costumes are elaborate.
Oh, yes.
They're gorgeous. I also have always had this feeling that they're really hot.
Yeah. But we have new technology and fabrics, wicking fabrics, which, you know, cut down on the sweat and the intake of any fluids or liquids, but there's nothing you can do about fur. You're just going to have to be hot and take it.
Yeah, I've always wondered about that. I assume they have to take regular breaks and you keep
exactly.
An eye on hydration. And
mm-hmm. All of that. And comfort. You know, it is anything a comfortable costume so that you don't even notice that you're expiring.
Yeah, you have to balance the need to sing and dance mm-hmm. and move around, mm-hmm. sometimes when it's 90 degrees with 90% humidity.
Exactly, and still smile.
Yeah, I've always wondered how they don't sweat to death.
Now we hydrate them. We make them hydrate. There's always free Powerade and Gatorade for any person who's in a show.
I also wonder what it's like to create such iconic costumes. Like when I say Belle, like everybody knows the big yellow dress or
oh, yes.
Cinderella or every they're such iconic like images.
Yes.
It's got to be like, is it pressure to be like, I have to make the dress that everybody dreams about?
And I worked for the, what is it? Beauty and the Beast, which is on stage at Disney Hollywood Studios every day of the year, 7 shows a day, and have to create Belle's dress. I'm known as a costumer in this realm,
yeah,
where there's a costume designer and then there's that person that runs around and gets all the stuff done. That, yeah, that was me.
Oh my gosh.
And it's so funny you even said the Belle, because I had to dress Whoopi Goldberg as Belle.
Oh my goodness.
For The View. They were coming to do an actual show from The View with Whoopi Goldberg in a Belle dress. And I said, well, she can't be Belle because that's iconic, like you said. So we found a very suitable, same color palette. Gotta be that. And she loved the Beast. So we had a meet and greet with her. And you know that Whoopi smile when she saw the Beast, she forgot everything. We put a tiara on top of her dreads. And it was a magical moment, because putting on that dress, that iconic dress, and the gloves and the tiara, it transformed her. She actually really believed, with the Beast in front of her. She curtsied, he bowed. Oh, it was glorious.
I think of that. They have like the dress up for the little kids there too.
Oh, yes. Yes, you can buy the whole set and go to the Bippity Bop Boutique and get yourself the whole pixie dusting and the wand, the tiara, the shoes. Anything you can buy.
I think so much of costuming is creating imagination.
So much imagination and creativity and fun.
I mean, like, you get to create costumes for creatures that don't exist. For like,
that's right, because you're on the side of the Imagineers.
Yeah.
I know, since it's all about Disney, and it, that was a third of my life there. I just realized.
Yeah, it's. I also think that the thing about costuming that sometimes you don't realize is you also have to think about wear and tear and longevity.
Ooh.
You spend, I mean, those costumes are not quick to make.
No, we had a team of incredible seamsters and tailors from 17 different countries that worked at Walt Disney World in creative costuming. And wear and tear is not the word. They are built like the Titanic. Because that's a lot of money to invest in a costume that's worn 70.
The Belle dress is like a wedding dress.
It is. And the price tag, cha-ching. But Mickey's is still the most expensive.
Really? Mickey, I would not have guessed.
Yes, Mickey's complete costume is about $12,000.
What? Is it the fur?
It's everything. It's soup to nuts.
And he's got like all different outfits. He's got Christmas outfits, and he's got like
tuxedos and Kwanzaa. He's got it all. And every he's got more clothes than Barbie. He really does.
Yeah, and at any given time you have a number of people playing him in different parts of the park.
We have a Mickey alert for that, because we have to keep the magic.
There can only be one Mickey in one place.
There's one Mickey, one place, and you can't ruin that magic. And you'll get a high sign or a hand gesture, hey, Mickey alert. I said, gotcha, boss. And that's what we called him, boss.
Yeah. How do you deal with wardrobe malfunctions in the wild at Disney?
Wardrobe malfunctions. Well, there's a couple of times, especially in a live show, and you're on the fifth show and somebody's didn't get gussied up or connected, because there's plenty of dressers. But that one good spin, I remember Mrs. Potts in a costume
of
fell over and, of course, couldn't get up. So she just creatively rolled herself off stage. So you can see these little feet just going, wee, off into the distance.
Goodness.
It was quite hilarious. But she didn't break the magic. She just knew that, oh,
you got to roll with it, literally.
Literally, right off the stage. And then we got her back up, and she was fine.
Oh, my gosh. I love it. When you said Mrs. Potts, I was like, oh, gosh, where is this going?
No. I steered you back.
So now you are the costume studio manager.
Yes.
At the Department of Theater, Film, and Media here at OSU. How did you end up here?
Oh, my. Well, it's been a dream of mine to actually teach. My mother was an educator for many, many years, and she instilled in me these values of you got to share your knowledge. And as soon as Disney, I said, wow, 18, I'm good. Came back to Ohio. I'm from Akron. worked at Kent State University?
My alma mater.
Awesome. Kent State was a great stepping point to get in back into higher education. And then COVID hit. And there went theater. But in the meantime, at 2 a.m, while I was doing paint by numbers, I just Googled University, Ohio, costume studio. And this job popped up. Couldn't believe it. It was a Zoom meeting, which I had with my dog dressed up in the background. And
you costume your dog?
Yes. That is the most well-dressed dog, Duchess Bella. She has since passed, but her clothes and her memory live on.
Oh, I love it. How many outfits did the Duchess have?
Oh, the Duchess has, as counting, of 2 wardrobe bins
of costumes.
And every time there was a dog costume contest and they saw me coming, they're like, pack it up, people. The Duchess is here.
Oh, I love that. So what do you do at Ohio State day to day? Like, what is a typical day for you?
Typical day, I swipe my card at the new building that we have over there by the Wexner Arts District. And I teach 16 students how to make the costumes for the productions that we do, the 4 productions that we put on. And they love it. I have repeat customers that come back. And this is a life skill, I tell them. You will always need to know how to sew on a button.
Oh, my gosh, yeah.
You will always need to know, wow, these pants are too long. How do I hem them? Because they thrift now.
Oh, yeah. It's a real life skill. I sew.
Great.
And yeah, and I make little like nightgowns for my daughters, and I made little like baby blankets when they were born and that kind of stuff. It's also just a really great hobby. Like, I get a tear in a sweater and I'm like, I can fix this.
Oh, it's stress relieving, and I love doing it, so I just feel like I'm not really working.
Although, I don't know, like hand beading that.
Oh, well, we're not into couture just yet, but.
But hand beading is the kind of thing that can make you want to rip your eyes out.
Oh, yeah. If you have any eyesight left.
But I mean, at Disney, I imagine there's lots of sparkle.
There is tons of sparkle. Swarovski crystals were created in beadwork for Belle's dress for Fantasmic, the outdoor water show that we had. And the designer said, these Swarovski crystals are the only thing that will give it fire. I was like, you sure you don't want these cheaper beads over here?
No, Swarovski crystals are beautiful, but like that's a lot of like E6000 glue and like sticking.
Yeah, E6000, the day we use that word at Disney.
Oh, no. So that's not how you're putting it on the dress.
No, that's, as they would call it, cosplay.
So how do you get them on the dress then?
They are hand sewn.
Oh, jeez.
They were applied onto fabric, and then the fabric, beaded fabric, applied to the dress.
I wouldn't be the person who did it.
And the dress was locked up at night after every show because it was that expensive.
It's also got to be heavy.
It was heavy. The understructure for that dress is, now that I recall, and luckily all she did was on a barge and wave. That was the extent of that dress.
What happened to it? Where is it now?
Oh, you know what? There are archival places in L.A. where all of these gowns end up. But we have warehouses over in Orlando by the airport that we put all the past costumes. And we also go to all the other, we distribute costumes to Shanghai, Hong Kong, Japan, Paris. All those costumes end up somewhere in L.A.
Nobody knows. They should make a museum. Like, I know. People would go to see all the costumes.
I'm going to maybe make myself available to be that curator for those.
That would be your next career.
I need one.
No, I mean, look, you know, what is it? When you go to like the National Mall in D.C., you see a lot of the inaugural dresses worn by first ladies.
Right.
Everything from Michelle Obama to Dolly Madison. Like, you can see their dresses.
Yes, you can. And somebody has to corral all those costumes up. And nobody has done that for Disney. Interesting. I know that somebody's thinking of this wonderful opportunity, but I think I'd be the one to apply for it first.
So Star Trek is listed under your areas of expertise. Can you tell me about that?
Oh, live long and prosper. I fell in love with Star Trek at a young age. My father would watch it, and I just wanted to know who was that lovely black woman at the console, because I really had never seen any black people on TV or other than movies like Sidney Poitier or Dorothy Dandridge than my parents exposed me to. And I said, and it's sci-fi, and there's space, and her hairdo's cool. And the costumes that they had were really caught my eye, too.
Oh, yeah.
So I've been on 3 Star Trek cruises where I've been on with all the stars from the original series to Next Generation. Many, many photographs, many, many autographs I can retire with after if I happen to want to ever part with them.
But you never got to do the costuming for Star Trek.
Never. Oh, but it, you know what?
Favorite Star Trek captain?
I'm a Picard fan. Jean-Luc.
Same.
Oh, yes. I'm sorry. He's just a sexy man.
It may just be generational for me. That's the one I grew up with.
That's same here. Oh, but he never comes out for any of the conferences. So to get a Jean-Luc autograph is very rare.
Oh, I didn't know that.
No, I know. You can get number one, Jonathan Frakes, anytime.
Well, that was Lauren Coco-Mayer, costume studio manager at The Ohio State University. Thank you so much for this conversation.
Thank you.
And thank you all for listening to All Sides, right here on 89.7 NPR News.